Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome, everybody, to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Really going in depth with our small business owners here in Minnesota. In the studio today, we have Kathy Flaminio. She is the creator of 1000 Petals Limited Liability Company, which is a training and consulting company on the science and practice of mindfulness and movement. Kathy is committed to developing products and services that provide transformative experiences to help adults and children live a more integrated life. Kathy holds a master's degree in social work and has over 20 years in schools. As the National Director of Training Development of Yoga Calm, Kathy has guided over 8,000 professionals to integrate yoga-based movement, mindfulness, and social-emotional skills strategies into classrooms, hospitals, home care, and therapeutic settings. Kathy has partnered with the University of Minnesota Masonic Children's Hospital to provide trauma-sensitive yoga therapy for children and adolescents on the mental health and dual diagnostic units. Over the past 5 years, Kathy has worked with four of the largest school districts in Minnesota to bring Yoga Calm training to their educators district-wide. In 2014, Kathy helped develop the Teen Resiliency Program in the Twin Cities with Dr. Henry Emmons and other physicians and psychologists. This program is an integrative, skill-based model used to support teens with anxiety, depression, and other stress-related conditions. I have taken her Yoga Calm training and became certified to help kids, and we'll go into more detail about that later in the show. When we had our chess program that my husband and I were running, and we had 180 kids that we were trying to help calm for chess training at the end of a Friday afternoon. It's kind of crazy. But anyways, welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Yeah, great. All right. So that's your introduction. You've got so much. I just really admire your work that you're doing. I think is totally changing kids' lives, parent lives, anybody that is influenced with the training that you're doing.
Thank you.
Is making a difference. And these are not just skills that you learn once and then you're done with them, but it's through practice. These kids learn how to breathe. They learn how to keep in touch with their body, connect with their heart, and really learn skills for life.
It's amazing. I know. I love my work.
Yeah.
I love what I do.
Terrific. So let's go back a little bit and bring us up to speed of where you're at now. But let's go back first.
Okay.
And tell us a little bit about where you grew up.
So I grew up in Ames, Iowa, and my dad is an archaeologist, was a professor at the Iowa State University, and my mom a social worker. So I do laugh when I think I was that unique in picking my career because I graduated with anthropology and human services in Spanish. So not super creative, but so I grew up in Ames, Iowa, a beautiful, small, you know, smallish town, but my dad was an archaeologist, so we were exposed to work all over the world, and we had many, many different people staying in our home. Margaret Mead came to our home one time for a symposium, and so I felt like I had the best of both worlds. It was small. I had a lot of friends, professors, kids, very multicultural environment, and just got exposed to a lot, too, but in a small town. I mean, it's just this kind of dichotomy. And it was
Right, because
really
normally you don't think that you know, you'll have that kind of interaction with Margaret Mead, who's...
Yeah. I mean, very academic. I mean, everybody's like, oh, you're from Iowa, the farms. I'm like, well, no, actually, very academic community.
Yeah.
You know, most of our friends' parents were at the university or, you know, at Iowa State. Yeah. So it was just a really, really great place to grow up. And sister and brother, I'm the youngest of three. So the baby of the family, which comes with, you know, all sorts of different things. And... Then I knew I wanted to be in social work. I think I knew my whole life that I wanted to serve. I watched my mom and my dad, and it had always been a part of me, and that's how I actually came up to the Twin Cities. I went to McAllister College.
Oh, okay.
So my brother and sister picked all the other small colleges, Carleton and Grinnell, and I was like, I want to be up in the cities, and came here, and really, because of the human, you know, services and all the opportunities up here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, we've got a really built-in, strong therapeutic community.
Yeah.
And very supportive of families. And
I mean, it's a great place. I mean, it's a great place. And there was a lot of opportunities, but it wasn't too big.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted to be in a city, but not in a really big city.
Yeah, like Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. And what were some of your fondest childhood memories?
I was thinking about this. We went to a lot of powwows. Oh. I grew up, you know, my dad had his crew. We grew up kind of on excavations, you know, down in Iowa. I mean, he wasn't one of the world travelers. He stayed local and did a lot of local work. He started the Native American and Indian program. So I have a lot of memories of just being around all different cultures and having people in our home and cooking and, you know, being really involved in the community.
Okay. So all those, that it sounds very enriching.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what were some of the, what was the greatest challenge you felt you had growing up as a child?
Well, I had difficulty learning to read. And so that was a big challenge for me. And, you know, I think about it now, I was really pretty terrified about speaking in front of anybody and having people know that I was having difficulty reading. And I'm Jewish, and we have Passover every year. And one of our traditions with Passover is that you read around, you read the service.
Friday night dinners.
Yeah, and it's led by children. I mean, the Passover service, the kids ask the four questions. And so every Passover, I would have this minor panic attack, like, okay, what am I going to read? And people are going to know I can't read. And it was so interesting. And yet, I think now I talk about it nowadays. It's like if someone said, you know, you're going to be older and you are going to be a public speaker. And I would be like, you have got to be kidding. That's my biggest fear. But then I realized, like, what if your biggest challenge in your life was your gift?
Yes.
And so I think looking back, even though I struggled, I think it has really taught me a lot and brought me, you know, here I am in education. I'm working with kids that are struggling, not just in reading, with many things in their lives.
Yeah.
And that, I think, really informed me, you know, my work.
Yeah.
But I do think it is, you know, I the other day I was playing a song, you know, something about what is in your way. And I said, what if what is in your way is the way?
Yeah.
Oh. What if the roadblock is it?
Yeah. Right.
And what would happen if we didn't soften into that and get more curious about that?
Mm-hmm.
We might, because I feel like a lot of people are struggling with certain things. And if we become the whole struggle, we don't understand what the gift is in that.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly. So becoming curious is really important in building resiliency.
Yeah. And, you know, being the youngest too, I had a lot of people help me, which was helpful, but also, you know, as a business owner, I've had to continue to look at my paradigm and look at my, like, how I view things.
Yeah.
You know, how I accept support and how I support myself.
Yes.
You know, so that's been really informative too.
Yes.
You know.
Very cool. Well, let's take a minute and check in.
Yeah.
So you filled out the self-awareness mentoring journal.
Yeah.
And since we're talking about, you know, difficulties and overcoming them. And one of the ways is to be really in touch with your feelings.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling?
I am feeling, I'm going to look right here. I'm feeling excited. I'm very curious. I love doing these kind of things. I don't really, you know, I have some questions, you know, I got some questions, but you know, I think these interviews are very organic too.
Yes.
Feeling aware, optimistic and receptive.
Very cool.
I'm feeling pretty good right now, actually.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. Good. And I'm feeling compassionate and mentally fluid and clear, although I've been recovering from a sinus infection. And so our listeners will probably hear a little inflection in my voice just because I have a lot of drainage going on. When did you start begin showing signs of like being a leader? Were there some things in school that you, like people started bringing out leadership qualities in
Well, I was really outgoing. Okay. I mean, I kind of took a lead in the social area for sure with, you know, planning things as kids and kind of being the organizer. I look at my daughter right now and I'm like, oh my gosh, she is the organizer and she's the planner. And that's how kind of I was too, kind of outgoing organizing. But I think my real leadership kind of came in college when I actually got out of the home. So
Did your parents inspire you, do you think, for some of the leadership too?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think I've been influenced by them. But, you know, when you're, you know, family dynamics, like I was the youngest of three. So I wasn't, you know, the leader in the family, really. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but I always felt that, you know, it was great growing up, but it's just the birth order.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
So you
know, and then you put
part
things
of it,
in
you're not,
I was the baby,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and I
you're
followed
not allowed
my brother.
To lead.
Yeah. And my brother and sister were amazing. My brother was just an amazing leader.
Oh.
And we kind of followed.
I see.
You know? And
so
my sister was in the middle.
Yeah, so that's why you said when you got to college was when you kind of broke out.
I kind of came into my own self.
Okay.
Yeah,
very
for sure.
Cool.
Like even I was thinking my sophomore year, I think I was the only, or maybe it was my freshman year, we went to Belize as part of our archaeology, our anthropology. It was a January term, and I was the youngest going there, and I just went. I was like, wow. I mean, I just went and studied the culinary techniques of the island. We lived on the small island that wasn't, I think, like, I swear, the year before they got TV. I mean, it was still quite remote. And I just started traveling and getting really excited about being in, you know, doing cultural anthropology. So started taking some leadership in that. And then I was always in the fitness industry. You know, I was always into working out, and I started working out at this club. And then they said, well, you should become an aerobics instructor. And here, then it was tapping into my, I'm not getting up in front of people, no way. But I thought, you know, I'll go through the training. Yeah. So I went through the training. And once I went through the training, I thought, I think I might like this because I kind of had the music to hide behind and the moves. And I, when I look back on my career, I think that was the point that got me over, you know, being in front of people and presenting in front of people. Like, I really believe that my little aerobics class, like, has informed me on being a leader. And I've always just kept teaching and being in the fitness industry. And, you know, we can talk later, but when my two careers merged, my social work and my fitness, I mean, when my big aha moment was for my business, it's those two careers. I mean, it was those two things that I was doing, social work and fitness.
When you talk to people about integrative skill-based model, tell us a little bit more about that.
So integrative really just means that we're using our mind, body, and heart. So we're looking at the whole person. And we say that all the time, like, oh, we're doing education for the whole child. I'm thinking, well, I'm not seeing a lot of physical movement. And, you know, we look at the whole person, the mental, physical, and emotional. So we would look at nutrition. We will look at sleep. We will look at movement. We will look at mental health and social emotional, you know, all those pieces.
Yes.
And so the integrative program that with Dr. Henry Emmons, the Teen Resiliency Program, is really providing all those skills, all those areas for teens.
Okay.
Mindfulness, movement, nutrition.
And are there still concerns about yoga being more of a...
religion?
Yes.
You know, we actually, it was just so interesting. We've been we're in five of the largest school districts, and we're training, you know, individuals all over the world. And just recently, again, we've had a few, you know, families and come up and, you know, say, I'm concerned that this is religion. And a lot of it is, I had these mentors just observe me yesterday, as a matter of fact, because they're going to have a conversation with some of their families because the families have had questions. And so they came in and observed. And I just want every parent to come and observe, because what we're doing is just social emotional learning. We're moving the body. We're breathing. I think when you hear the word yoga, though, I mean, and you go and look up on the internet, I mean, you see all these different poses, thinking that it's, you know, evoking some spiritual, you know, energy. And, you know, some, there are, you know, what we say is yoga is over 4,000 years old and it predates religions. There's a lot of religions that use yoga, but yoga is not the religion. But we want to have, I love the opportunity to have a conversation and have parents understand, like, why are we moving the body in these different directions? Mm-hmm. You know, we move the spine in yoga, we move the spine in six directions to create what's called a relaxed, alert state. And so there's different poses that can evoke that kind of openness of the body. We call it unwinding the nervous system. So I think when we have families come in and they see, oh, they're having leaders and followers and compliments and, you know, affirmations and all sorts of different things. And we're very, you know, our curriculum, I'm working with Jim and Linnea Gillen with Yoga Calm, and we're very specific. You will not see any Sanskrit or chanting or mantras or namaste or sun salutations. I mean, we're not doing any of that.
Yeah.
And that's really important that we honor all religion and all people. And I don't want a family to come in and feel like, oh my gosh, this feels exclusive or religious, because that's against the law. I mean, that really is the church and state separation. So
yeah,
when people say, well, can't I just say namaste? And I'm thinking, well, everything you do is that namaste. It means I connect with you. When I'm in a place of calm and regulation, I can connect with you. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to say that. And really, when you do say it after a yoga class, it does have more of that yogic, you know, it's not like you're just saying hello, you're using it in that context. So that might not be appropriate in the school setting.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just feel like, but I'm really grateful, you know, people sometimes get scared, like, oh my gosh, parents are getting, you know, like administrators might get worried. And we have so many great administrators that have helped families navigate this and just be open to the conversation. I mean, it's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
To educate.
Oh, right? Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
And who doesn't want their kids more focused? I mean, who doesn't want their kids more regulated? Like, no one's going to say, I don't want that.
Right.
And that's the whole point.
Yes.
Is self-regulation and,
yes.
and human connection.
Yes. Well, it worked really well in calming the children during chess.
Yeah.
You know, after the kids have had a full week of school and then they come in, you know, regroup and have some physical ways to kind of ground themselves.
Yes.
And calm their mind, because they're going to be sitting then, you know, and looking at a square board and trying to navigate the pieces. And they get really emotionally connected.
Yes.
With the game that they're playing.
Yes.
And it becomes really intense. And yoga has been a way to help them learn how to breathe through and handle yourself in a way that you can express your emotional self.
Yes.
But do it in a way that is not hurting anyone, but is helping you release it through physical and movement and breathing.
Yeah.
And how to give yourself a little time out.
Yeah. It's so important, because I think what's happening is we're raising really, really smart kids because we are really favoring the cognition, and great, but not, we need to raise really smart, healthy, emotionally connected children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole premise really of Yoga Calm, is that we treat the cognition and the emotional and physical. We grow those three areas equally. We honor those, because the physical body and being able to have endurance, and when you think about a chess game, having endurance, having focus, having the breath work, having the emotional state, I mean, all those are so important for the cognition.
Yeah.
Like, how we think is how we are, and how our body is how our mind is. So if our body starts to fatigue and slump, then our mind will start going with it.
Yes.
The same thing with the mind and body. I mean, they're very, very much connected and influenced. And I think in general in our society, we're pretty disconnected.
Well,
I think other cultures of the world are dancing and singing and connected to their physicality and emotional, very different than we are.
Yes.
You know?
Well, we've focused on cognitive development.
Yes.
We haven't focused on emotional development.
Yeah.
I mean, we can see it everywhere. Like, kids are smart kids, really stressed out, don't know how to deal with it.
And that's what our biggest mission is, to help kids grow those three areas and feel connected and create this movement where they're very, what we say, we're creating whole people.
Right. Exactly.
You know, so they can contribute to society and be connected.
You know, I was curious when you talked about your family of origin, and your dad being an archaeologist and your mom a sociologist.
Social worker. Yeah.
Social worker. And you were talking just about how your family informed and did lots of different activities that helped kind of promote your creativity and innovative thinking. Yeah.
Well, I think my dad, you know, he was very into rites of passages. So we celebrated all events. Like, I mean, it wasn't like you just celebrate like a 50th anniversary of his parents. I mean, it was this entire event. We created all this music and poetry and songs and dances.
I love that.
I think about it. And you know, so I will say personally, like when I became a woman, which, you know, as a young teenager, that, you know, you don't want your dad to really celebrate that. Oh, no, my father, it was a huge ceremony. And I got a squash blossom Native American necklace. He wrote me a poem, "You've Become a Woman." And we're so, you know,
I mean, it was so like this. Endearing.
I know. I mean, you don't get that in you know, a lot of American families. But it was, you know, part of the Native American tradition. I mean, every rite of passage is celebrated. And I think we've kind of lost that in our culture. And so, I mean, sometimes it was like, "Dad, are you kidding me?" But I think I always knew in my heart, like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like our house, still today, my sister and I are like, "Oh my gosh, what are we going to do with all these masks?" I mean, we have stuff from all over the world. Oh. And there are stories, and everything comes from somewhere that we know about, that either we know about or he better write about, so we really know.
Yeah.
And so I just, like, even my home, like, you walk into our house and there's masks all over, and there's a whole section on Native American history and all the peace pipes and the sage, and then you walk into African American history. I mean, there is everything all over the world, every area, China, I mean, and then the whole section on Judaism. And so I just grew up with this just really rich culture. And then my mom, you know, was an amazing cook, and we ate food from all over the world.
Oh,
like she was really creative. We never had a normal meal, I guess. When my friends come over, they're like, "Whoa, what are we eating today?" You know? So, I mean, it was really interesting. And we grew up in Ames, Iowa. So it was like this small kind of town, but yet big world in our household.
And, absolutely. And in tune with culture.
Yeah. And, you know, lots of books and, you know, when I, you know, we were talking about, you were asking where I met my husband. So yeah. I'll just say a little, you know, I come from a family of three children. My husband comes from a family of 10. We sit at the dinner table for 3 to 4 hours. Oh. There's no small dinner table. I mean, when poor husband came, because at his house, it's like 5 minutes, you better hurry and get your food because there's 10 kids, you know?
Right.
Actually, there's like 28 of us, and we have more than that when we get together, 22 grandchildren, or, you know. But I mean, it was a culture shock for him to come and sit at our table. He's like, "Are we going to be done here?" I mean, it was 3 hours. We talk about all this different stuff, you know? So we had to understand, my husband and I, when we met, you know, just coming from two different places.
Well, and where did he grow up?
He's from Iron Mountain, Michigan.
What's his name?
And his name is Tony.
Tony. Okay.
And Tony is in finance. So he is a very, you know, there's an answer, you know, to
there's a calculation.
There's a calculation, and I'm a social worker, and there's no answer, and I don't know any day what I'm going to walk into. So when we started dating, I was like, "It's Monday. What are we doing on Friday?" He's like, "Friday? Friday is so far away." And I'm like, "Yeah, but nothing in my life is predictable. I want to know if I'm going to have a date on Friday." And he's like, "Everything in my life is predictable, and I don't want to wait. I want to wait until like Friday morning to decide what we're going to, you know what I mean?" So once we realized that, like, we are very different in that way, we kind of found a way to, you know, meet in between and understand each other.
Yeah, where did you meet?
So good for balancing. We met through a friend of mine who actually dated his brother, and
in college, or
we met after college.
Okay,
I met him older. You know, I was, I think I was about 31 when I met him. I was one of those gals that I just said, "Oh, I guess I thought I was going to meet someone and have kids by now, but I guess not. And I'm going to go buy a condo." And of course, right when I decided I'm just going to do what I need to do, I met my husband.
That's funny. I had a similar story But I met Matthew when I was 35.
Yeah. I think it's great to meet when you're older, because I really had a really strong sense of myself. I had done a lot of travel, and it was wonderful, you know, to meet him. And he comes from, I mean, I always kind of thought, I kind of want to marry into a really fun, big family. You know, and here he was, 10 kids. There's four sets of twins in his family. He's a twin.
Four sets of twins? Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's so like almost unheard of.
Well, six sets is the world record. Because I was like, isn't your mom, aren't we the world record here?
Yeah.
And they're all like 10 or 11 months apart. We're not talking along. So they had, I think when his mom was 28, they had 10 kids. So they had six kids under three at one point. I mean, it's just wild.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I, you know, seven boys, three girls. I mean, when we were dating, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like a whole fraternity. I mean, it was just so fun. And they're Italian. And I think Italian Jewish families, I mean, there's a lot of similar cooking and eating and talking and everybody's loud. And so that was similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The volume, I can just imagine.
Lots of volume.
Yeah. Oh, and then you have how many kids together?
And so we have two kids. My daughter is going to be 15 and my son is 13.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're really great. Just great kids. I always think like, well, every age, I mean, I really love the baby time, you know, and I was busy too. I mean, I look back and I'm like, I was a kind of a mom that, you know, was balancing a lot of different things.
Yeah.
I always, you know, kept my self-care up. So, I mean, you have to carve out that time. And then when I started my own business, I was like, whoa. So I had ebbs and flows where I was like, okay, mom needs to be more present because I was so passionate about my work too.
Yeah. I think that's what makes it hard.
Yeah. That balance when I think about, and for women, you know, doing business, I mean, that's definitely unique. But the kids have been great. Every age has just been really fun. And they're really fun right now.
Do you have the rites of passages in your house, too, that you celebrate?
We do. My poor daughter was like, Mom, but I felt like I needed to. I'm like, I'm writing a poem for you. And I'm, you know. Yeah, so we try to celebrate some of those things, too, and carry on some of those
traditions.
Pieces, yeah. For sure.
Very cool. Well, share with us a little bit more about, this is a good segue into running your business.
Yeah.
So how did you learn about, you know, the different types of businesses? How did you know that you wanted to develop a limited liability company? Where did you get the money from? How did that all come together?
Oh my gosh, it is so organic. So like I was saying, like I started merging my careers of fitness and social work together when I was working in the public schools. And then when I took a sabbatical, I had that whole year to kind of, I had a cushion there, you know, because I had a paid, you know, paid leave. And so during that time, we started, once we got trained by Yoga Calm, we kind of helped them develop their train the trainer program. So during that time, I started, you know, doing some public workshops and having some finances come in. And then when I came back to the schools, I was working part-time, which was really great. So part-time was in the school. The other part was developing my business.
So the two, so after your sabbatical, you came back because you had two years then to come back. And when you came back, it was part-time?
Yes.
And that was acceptable?
And I was part-time actually before. So I should say that when I had my kids. So I had.
Okay.
It worked beautifully. And that's why I help. Because I'm afraid as we keep training people, there's a lot of people that want to come jump ship with me and join the business. You know, and I always say, you know, I felt so good because I went from part-time. I had my safety net. I had my, well, health insurance, but my husband too. And I mean, it definitely, I had a husband that had a job. So I'm going to say that. I mean, we needed my income, but I wasn't like on my own. And I think that's a bigger risk, you know.
Yeah.
But I started, it was just the win-win situation. I started having the business grow. And I had no idea really what I was doing. I talked to some people.
Like most of us, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was just doing the work and it started creating. And Yoga Calm founders, you know, Jim Gillen, the founder, is a business, you know, comes from corporate world. So he was guiding me a little bit also. But I felt like I had a safety net. So I started building the business and I knew within 2 years, I mean, there was no way I could sustain both because my business, the 1,000 Petals, was really starting to take off. And I was still doing the work without an LLC.
Okay. Then. And were you also teaching yoga?
Yep. I was teaching yoga. Yep. And I've
like
always
how many
that.
Times a week were you doing that?
I was teaching about 3 or 4 times a week.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Boy, wow.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how I have the energy, but I do have a lot of energy. because I feel like life is short. Yeah. I heard someone say, like, I want on my gravestone to say used up. And I'm like, I like that too.
Yeah,
like you just like live fully. You just go for it, you know?
Well, that would fit with yoga because you want to leave it all on the mat,
yes.
Right? When you're done.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So, and I, you know, when I came up with my name, my Thousand Petals, I came up with that name in a meditation, just kind of asking, what is this work? And the Thousand Petals really is, you know, the crown.
Yes.
You know, and as you become more aware, you know, the petals turn up. And the lotus flower is just a great symbol, you know, no mud, no lotus. So the beauty comes, and I kind of talked a little bit about it, but the beauty comes from kind of that struggle.
And using
that mm-hmm. struggle and using everything that you get.
Yeah.
So, and I became an LLC because I was going to do, you know, everybody asks, why aren't you nonprofit and all that? And I just thought, I want to be able to just do my work. And I mean, I am just like, go for it. And I was afraid if I did the nonprofit kind of, what is that, the
501c3,
mm-hmm. I might be a little limited, and I didn't want that.
Yeah.
And every now and then I'm like, oh, do I want to be nonprofit? But, you know, with my business, A Thousand Petals, we're a training and consulting company. We collaborate with nonprofits. So if there are grants out there, and the nonprofit gets the grant, and then I come in and partner with them. So it's been really great. And it's just allowed me a lot of freedom.
Yeah. Well, and less staff.
Yeah.
Because there's so much paperwork that you and reporting and filing.
I know.
Yeah.
And I kind of had done that with social work. I thought, I am not doing more paperwork, you know, documentation when I could be doing direct work. I just feel like I don't want that to be taken away. You know, and I'm a firm believer. I mean, I'm training all over the country and I'm doing a lot of training, but I still work in the hospital. We have a program on those two units. I'm still doing direct work with kids, and I will always do my direct work. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I can't present.
Yeah.
I mean, right. I need a story like mm-hmm. I just told you yesterday. We met with people were observing me because families were curious about this. So I feel like I've kind of organized my business in a way that I still am doing direct work, but now we're hiring. I have like 10 contractors. I mean, it's definitely grown. I mean, that growing pains has been hard.
10 contractors now?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I have a full, you know, I have a, you know, director of operations, director of program development, and then we have all these residency teachers. So we have.
Are you in your, and you're in your same location?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got enough space for everybody.
Well, everybody's a contractor, so we have Tula Yoga and Wellness is where we do our training, but I still have a home office, and then I have another space for storage for our stores.
Okay.
We're looking for space right now, actually, a collaborative space.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, so we've stated a LLC, and
have you taken any business classes?
No.
Have you written a business plan?
Yes, I have a business coach. About 4 years ago, I hired a business coach, and that was really helpful. You know, because I've been doing this pretty organically.
Yeah.
And one thing, a really big learning piece for me is I've always said, you know, well, I'm going to hire someone else to do the finance, and that's not my expertise, and I'm going to have that person do that. And what I realized shortly is that as a business owner, and this is probably business 101, which I probably would have learned in a class, but I'm way more experiential, is that I need to know all aspects of my business.
Yes.
And but I don't have to be the expert in it, but I have to know about it. And I, for a while there, I didn't know my numbers, and that was problematic.
Yeah.
And so now I know my numbers. I meet, you know, I have my accountant, and we meet, and she's so patient with me because that is not my area of expertise.
Yes. Yeah.
But I feel really great because I'm an emotional person, and I'm in emotional work, and I was making a lot of decisions emotionally.
Okay.
Where now I can still be emotionally, but they're based in fact. So mm-hmm. if I want to choose to, you know, go this way, my accountant will say, here are the numbers. You can do that, but just have it be based in fact rather than an emotional decision.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been really helpful. And that's been a learning curve because I think there were a few people that were hurt along the way when I wasn't in charge of my numbers and knowing, you know.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that's the trial and error of business ownership, yeah. right? And staying in tune with things.
Yeah. So the coach has been very, very helpful.
And how long did you work with the coach?
I'm still working with her. We've been working together for 4 years.
So, and how often do you
and
meet?
And we meet once a month, and we do some online. She meets with my team, and we've really, I mean, our big moment was we went from like, let's bring this work worldwide, let's bring this work nationwide, and then we realized like, let's just bring this to Minnesota. There's so much work here. There's so much work to be done. And my expertise, I think my gift is relationship.
Yes.
And building relationships and going deep with the work in our community right here. And we do work other places, but I keep getting more and more information, you know, feedback like, we just need to be here and we need to go deep and we need to make change right here.
Yeah, and stay grounded
yeah.
here.
And I have kids too, and that helps me stay here more. So,
yeah, that makes
so much
sense.
As far as not
sense.
Traveling around as much, I am a little bit, but
you got to keep that going.
Yeah. We're taking a group to Peru this summer. We do an international retreat usually.
Oh.
So, we'll take a group of anybody. A lot of them are educators, and we'll go down. We're going to this year hike Machu Picchu and work in the orphanages and do some of the yoga mindfulness internationally.
Wow.
We'll so, if you want to go, June 20th to the 20th.
June 20th? Okay. Well, yep. My husband just finished yoga teacher training in the spring, and I'm just finishing yoga
Excellent.
Teacher training
right.
next week.
Wow.
So,
come down and share your gifts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Peru, June.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here. I just feel like there's you're a wealth of inspiration and knowledge, and I just would love to stay connected.
Yes, it's been great.
Okay, Honored. Terrific. Well, I'll see you in the next episode.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Mike Cabea, thanks, our sound engineer and photographer. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you soon.
Good night.
Next week.
Thank you.